Welcome to the Redwood Wellbeing Podcast with Alyssa Sett, where I am dedicated to supporting parents on the journey of nurturing their child's healthy relationship with food and their body image. I understand the unique challenges of raising a child in a world that is pulling them toward body dissatisfaction and unhelpful eating habits. So join me to become empowered to make a lasting difference in your child's wellbeing journey. Hello and welcome back to the Redwood Wellbeing Podcast. I'm Alyssa and happy Easter. I hope you're all having a wonderful weekend so far with your families. I've already done an Easter episode where I give a lot of tips about how you can support your child's intuitive eating at Easter, but I did just want to do this short, hopefully short Q&A with some questions that have come in the last week or so, particularly some questions that have come in on a post that I did with Boob to Food called It's Just a Chocolate Bunny, which had some really helpful information on there and some great questions that have come in. So I'm going to do my best to answer all of the questions that I've got here in front of me. I probably won't go into too much depth with any of them. So if you have more questions based on what I share here, please just reach out or you can always book in a session so I can give you really tailored support. Let's just jump straight into it. So the first question that I got asked was, when should I start letting my child have chocolate? She's almost three and I'm trying to hold off as long as possible. So there's not really any age that you need to start offering your child chocolate. Every family does things differently. There's not really a right or a wrong with it. If you wanted to hold off longer, if you're just not comfortable with offering her chocolate, then don't. You don't have to. I would say that the only time I would encourage you to start offering chocolate is if your child is showing consistent signs of missing out or showing that they're feeling restricted by it because their friends, other kids are getting chocolate and they're not, and they're making it very clear that they would also like it. So of course that doesn't mean that you have to then give your child chocolate, but you do just have to kind of weigh up the possibility of, is this creating a scarcity mindset? Is this feeling of restriction and deprivation possibly going to lead to a preoccupation? And what can that lead to down the track? So you just need to weigh up those factors and figure out what's right for your child and your family. If she's the first child, I think you could go a bit longer before she's really aware of what's going on at Easter. She might not even understand yet that Easter is synonymous with chocolate, so she might not realize that she is missing out on anything. Typically though, if she is a younger sibling and the older kids are getting something, then usually by the age of around three, four, I would say definitely four, they understand that they're not getting what their siblings are getting. So, but if she's a first child, then you just have to decide what's best for you and for her and the whole family. But yeah, that's fine to hold off. And when you do introduce chocolate, you might like to choose chocolate that has less sugar or less additives. Like, you can do it however you like. And she may be none the wiser that she's getting a different chocolate to what a lot of other kids are getting. But yeah, I'd only say introduce the same chocolate that other kids get when she's making it really clear that she wants it, she's missing out, and it's not fair that she doesn't get to have that. But in saying that, there are families that still hold that boundary that they're not going to offer the store-bought chocolate like the Cadbury and, you know, all the other brands that you see at Coles and Woolies, etc. And they will make their own chocolate. Maybe it'll be Carob or it'll just be brands that they're much more comfortable with. So you get to do it however you feel comfortable with. Okay, next question. My 10-year-old compared his Easter chocolate amount to his siblings. Is that a preoccupation? I mean, yes and no, because most children will have some level of preoccupation. Like, my kids have a mild preoccupation where they, of course, like chocolate, but they're not obsessed with it. So I think it is a really normal thing for a child to want that fairness and want the equality of what my siblings have, I want to make sure I have as well. So while it might be a mild preoccupation, I wouldn't say that that alone is concerning. I would only say it's concerning if it is also combined with sneaking food or constantly asking to eat it, having huge meltdowns when he can't eat it. So it's not just this one thing in isolation. I wouldn't call that concerning that he compares to his siblings. It's pretty standard for kids to say, hey, they got that much and I only, you know, I got one less, or let's just make sure we got the exact same amount. I don't see that as an issue. And I think I spoke about this in my last episode about how we all sit somewhere on a the continuum of preoccupation, kids and adults. If you imagine it like a line, and at one end you've got eating disorder or extremely disordered eating, and at the other end, indifference, I suppose, about a food. And so we all sit somewhere along that continuum of how mild to extreme our preoccupation is, and that moves throughout our lives. It's dynamic. And so pretty much everyone has a preoccupation with chocolate to some degree, but it doesn't mean that preoccupation is a negative thing or a concerning thing. Okay, so the next one is, I'm trying to figure out how to navigate family Easter when there's a lot of talk of working off chocolate and being naughty, etc., from extended family. Yes, that's hard. I guess firstly, I would say go into the gathering knowing where you draw the line. Like, what has to be said for you to say something immediately to that person? What things are you willing to let go of? Have a think of what kind of things have already been said in the past, and is it concerning enough for you to speak up about it to them at the time or later on? And I did an episode on this a few months ago about speaking to family members who make comments about your child's eating. So I talked a little bit about this and how you can address it. And there are a few options. So if you get a chance, listen to that, because I go into it in more detail. But yeah, pretty much you just got to figure out, where am I going to draw the line? So if someone at the family gathering says, oh, I've eaten so much chocolate, I've got to work this off tomorrow, you might be able to say to your child, that's not how we do things in our family. We don't need to work off our food. And you can either do that privately to your child. You can say it right then and there so that that person hears it as well. It's just depending on how brave you're feeling. I would say it's important enough to bring it up with that person, and it can be done in a really respectful way. I would say that depending on the comment, it's important enough to say something to your child, and it depends on their age as well, how much context they understand. If they're really little, they might not even really pay attention to it. But if the child hears it about working off food or being naughty or any of that language of morality, I think it is important enough to say to your child, hey, that's what other people say about food, but in our family, we eat peacefully, we don't feel guilty, we don't have to work off our food. So you could also say that before you go to the gathering. You could say it at the time, you could say it after. It really just depends on the situation. So it's hard to give you a really specific answer because it just depends on so many things. But yeah, figure out if you feel uncomfortable saying something to the adult that's made those comments, that's fair enough. Like, it can be a hard thing to do, but I would still, depending on my child's age, say something to my child about how that's just not how we do things and in our family we. And speaking of naughty, another question is, if we don't call chocolate naughty, then what do we call it? We just call it chocolate. A chocolate can't be naughty. A chocolate can't be bad. It's not possible for a food to have morality like people can. A person can be called naughty or bad, but a food can't. So we just call it chocolate. We don't call it junk. People call it sweet food. Some people call it treats. I don't really use the word treat. I do say sweet food because it does have sweetness to it, and chocolate fits into that category. I don't even call it unhealthy. We just don't have to give it any of those labels. We can just call it chocolate. And one of the reasons I don't use the word unhealthy, even though I know it doesn't have as much nutrient density as many other foods, is because the term healthy is pretty subjective, and someone can be considered really healthy because they're not eating chocolate, but they could have a very disordered relationship with it and restricting it. And so that's not a healthy thing, amongst many other reasons. So you just call it by its name, chocolate. And then off the back of that, someone has said, what about sometimes foods? So like chocolate being called a sometimes food, and acknowledging which foods are healthy, have more nutrients than others, so that we eat lots of the healthy foods and not as much of the unhealthy foods. So this is talking about explaining to a child about foods, calling them sometimes foods, saying that some are healthier than others and we eat more of the healthy stuff, not much of the unhealthy stuff. I know that the phrase sometimes foods is pretty common, and I don't really tell people not to use it. I just don't really use it myself. I think it just kind of implies that there's foods that are all the time foods and other foods that aren't. And to a child who is a pretty concrete thinker, I think that can kind of encourage that binary you know, good, bad thinking. But yeah, I don't think that's a huge concern to say sometimes foods. And yes, of course, we can acknowledge that, and we should acknowledge that foods have more nutrients than other foods. And so we want to give our bodies lots of the foods that are going to help our bodies. And then there's other foods that don't offer as much, but we still really enjoy them. And so that's a part of our eating as well. I do just steer clear of the labels, like healthy and unhealthy. Again, just because kids don't have the same understanding of context that we do around foods. And so those labels, healthy and unhealthy, can cause them to put foods in those two boxes. You know, it's good or it's bad, it's healthy or unhealthy. And what about this one? Can I have this one? And so that can then lead to some fear around foods, or some guilt or feelings of shame about, or self-judgment about some foods. So I'm just not really a fan of the labels. And I know that makes it a bit trickier when you're trying to explain foods to kids. It would be a lot simpler if you could just say, this is healthy, this is unhealthy. But that's just not the case for food. Food offers something, even if it's just energy, like lollies offer energy, you know, so they give the kids' bodies something, and depending on their age will determine how we explain what something does to our body. But of course, lollies are not going to support our bodies as well as what steak is or eggs are. So we don't have to pretend that food is all the same as each other. We absolutely should be educating our children on what a food can do to support our body. I would just recommend you do it in a way that is positive. So saying that this food can help your body in this way, that food can help your body in that way, rather than we don't eat that because it could make us sick. Like that fear-based message, I think, is unhelpful. And so if we're talking to our kids about chocolate, rather than just saying that it's unhealthy or it's a sometimes food, you could just say how we enjoy the taste of chocolate, and so it's nice to eat that. We just don't have it all the time, because then we wouldn't have as much room in our tummies for all the other foods that our body does love. There's so many great foods that we get to enjoy, and so we want to be able to eat the whole range of food. So just framing it in more of a positive way about how we want to add nutrients for our body rather than restrict sugar. I wouldn't get too caught up in the wording, and it's not a huge deal if you say healthy or unhealthy. Just keep in mind that kids do think in that black and white, good, bad kind of way. And we just want to help them avoid any fear of food. Someone wrote in, and I paraphrase with this question, about how a chocolate bunny isn't just a chocolate bunny, based on this post that we wrote saying a bunny is just a bunny. They're saying, well, not if it's from Cadbury and it has bad ingredients, and they use the word bad, and how not all chocolate is the same, because there's some very poor quality options out there. Yes, there absolutely are. There are options that have higher sugar or more additives. And so every family gets to do Easter the way that they would like to do it. So if you are not comfortable with some ingredients or some brands, you don't have to buy them. You just go with what you are comfortable with. I just wouldn't use that language of bad chocolate or bad ingredients with the kids. If they're a bit older, you can explain or even show them the nutrition panel and say how in our family we like to choose options that have fewer additives, less sugar, those kinds of things, but without bringing that language of morality in it, like good and bad. And I would have loved to be able to afford different options for the kids, because by the time I'm buying chocolate eggs for my kids and nieces and nephews and neighbors, and it all adds up. And so there's brands out there that I would much prefer, but they're just so expensive, and it's just not doable for a lot of families. So it is a privilege for many families to be able to afford the best of the best in terms of the ingredients. And this might have been the same person or a different person on the same post who has said that not all food is actually food, and my child knows that some foods hurt our body and it's harmful to normalize eating some foods that don't help our body. She goes on to say, the idea that we need to cater to our child's future food issues is mind-blowing. If we don't eat the poison chocolate, they don't eat it either. No wonder the world is full of hypersensitive people nowadays if we can't get through a holiday without someone worrying about a future eating disorder. Yikes. I'm not sure where to begin. So not all food is actually food. some foods hurt our body and it's harmful to normalize eating some foods that don't help our body. Well, to that I would say a child can have information that a food is not as helpful to their body as another food, but they might still desire that food because there is a relationship with that food. So our connection with the food is more than our education on that food. It's more than the information that we have about its nutrient density. So I and many people that have had disordered relationships with sweet food knew how bad it was for our body, knew that binging on it was not good for our body, and yet we couldn't help ourselves. We felt like we had no control around that food. So I guess what I'm saying is it's not as simple as just telling our child, this food hurts your body or this food is not very helpful to your body, so steer clear. And then the child says, okay. Like, it's just not always that simple. And if it is that simple in your family, that's wonderful. And your child isn't feeling like they're missing out. They don't have a preoccupation. They have no issue with not eating chocolate and lollies and packaged and processed food. That's great. My content is not for you. But to simplify it like that for everybody, I think that's concerning. Because how do you explain the millions of people that have eating disorders and really struggle with having sweet food in the house because they can't stop eating once they start? And for her to say the idea that we need to cater to our child's future food issues is mind-blowing. I think it is very reasonable and wise to cater to our child's future food relationships. I think we should. I think preventative measures for preoccupations, disordered eating, eating disorders, and so on, I think preventative measures is necessary. And she ends it on, can't get through a holiday without someone worrying about a future eating disorder. Eating disorders are worth parents being proactive about. I kind of find that mind-blowing, that we should just not even think about it. And then I guess when it happens, then we go into damage control. Yeah, I don't know. I find that whole comment really, well, interesting, because I guess there are many people out there that don't have a disordered relationship with food and they're eating whole foods and they're not eating processed foods. And, you know, so they're really happy with their food choices and they're passing that knowledge on to their kids. I think that's such a privilege to be in such a good place with food that you can't even fathom that other people aren't, and that there needs to be some support to help kids to not get to that point as well. So this particular person that commented, they might have a child who grows up having a really peaceful relationship with food. They may have a child who grows up to say, my parents never let me have anything and now I gorge whenever I get the chance. Like, we just don't know. And so my content is to just, I guess, support the parents that do know what a disordered food relationship looks like and they don't want that to be passed down onto their kids. And so how can they do things differently? That was why I started Redwood. It was like that breaking the cycle kind of theme. And so I sincerely hope that this person's children grow up to feel really peaceful about not having been offered what they would call the poison food. I do really hope that, yeah, those children don't ever have that feeling of restriction or deprivation. But I guess I'm just really saddened that this space of prevention and education to help prevent poor food relationships, yeah, it saddens me that that's considered like hypersensitive or unnecessary. Anyway, moving on. How do you navigate Easter chocolate for 18-month-olds? I can't really see a reason why you would need to introduce chocolate to your 18-month-old. That's really young. They don't really have a concept of Easter. They wouldn't feel like they're missing out on anything. Even if they're a younger sibling, I still think 18 months is maybe too young. Of course, you get to do whatever you want to do in your family. Some kids are eating chocolate by one. Like, it's just whatever's right for your family. But there's not any reason to offer an 18-month child chocolate for the purposes of food neutrality or reducing preoccupation. As I answered earlier, it's just a matter of when that child is old enough to realize that they're missing out, and then you got to start making decisions and weighing up when you're ready and what kind of chocolate that will be and so on. Similar to that, this person's children are receiving eggs from family, but we haven't introduced it yet. hoping to delay it, but I don't want them being treated any differently. Yeah, that's tricky. If you were to say to the family members beforehand, hey, I haven't introduced it to our kids yet, but then the kids are seeing their cousins or whoever else getting offered chocolate, yes, they might feel like they're missing out. A couple of things you could do, you might be able to say to the kids beforehand, hey, the other kids in the family are getting these chocolates. We don't do those ones, but we'll do these other ones instead. How do you feel about that? You know, the kids might be okay with that, or they might say, no, we want what everyone else is having. Then you've just got to weigh up holding the boundary to introducing it when you're ready, or introducing the type of chocolate that you want, weighing that up against the potential preoccupation, you know, the kids moving along that continuum towards greater preoccupation. I'm trying to think what I would do in that situation. It just depends on if the kids feel like they need to have the same chocolate as what everyone else is having. Because if they didn't, what you could do is give the chocolate that you're happy for those family members to pass on to your kids. Say to them, would it be okay to give them these ones? Or here, I'll give these ones to you and it can be from you, but at least it's the chocolate that we're comfortable with. And so then the kids are getting the chocolate you're comfortable with from those family members. I guess that only backfires if the kids see, well, our chocolate is different to everybody else's chocolate and we want what they've got. So you do just have to kind of weigh up a few things there. But if you're firm on delaying, and if you just do want to wait another year or two or however long, you do get to do that. It's not that you have to do anything you don't want to do. But yeah, they might feel like they're being treated differently and they may not like that. So is there a way that you can help them to be accepting of the situation and to make it less of an issue for the kids? Is there any solution there? That's a bit tricky for me to say because I don't know the kids. I don't know what other options you might have for chocolate that you're happy with. So reach out if that's you. Next question. So what to say when my child asks why a lot? Like, why can we have an apple every day but not cake? Is it because apples are good and cake is bad? Good question. So that can be tricky, knowing how to word a response with a young child. So you might like to share how some foods offer our bodies more help than others in terms of energy or what it gives to our brains with like problem solving and being out of focus, making our muscles stronger, etc., etc. So while cake can offer our bodies some help and it tastes really yummy and that's a great reason to eat the food, we would like to be eating a lot of variety of foods that do lots to help our bodies. So you just want to frame it in a way that promotes choices that show love for our bodies rather than fear of consequences for eating certain food. So just framing it in a way that's talking about taking good care of the body and still having yummy foods that our taste buds like, but a food like an apple helps more than just our taste buds. And then depending on the age, you can go into more depth about what's in an apple, like how the fiber can help us or how the sugars are natural sugars and it's got potassium and vitamin C and just explaining the nutritional value of a food, depending on whatever the food is that your child is asking about. Just saying how it helps the body. And so that's why we don't want to say that cake is unhealthy or bad, because cake can offer the body things as well. Think of the ingredients in a cake. Our body will use those ingredients. It's usually about the sugar content that a parent might say that a food is less healthy. Oh, I really like this question. This person says, by saying that you can have two Easter eggs on a particular day, aren't you indicating that food is different anyway? You'd never say you can only have two pieces of broccoli today. So this is about the post about how a bunny is just a chocolate bunny. And one of the tips was, I think, putting a small portion of chocolate with a meal. So I think in this example, it was saying having two Easter eggs with dinner. And so the person is asking about, well, if you're doing that, aren't you saying that it's different to broccoli? Because you would never say you can have two pieces of broccoli with your dinner. And to that, I would say that we want our kids to understand that food is morally equal in terms of judgment. So there is no bad, there is no good. They're all on a level playing field when it comes to a judgment of the food. But we don't have to pretend that all food is nutritionally equal. So that's not helpful to a child to say that all foods are exactly the same in terms of their nutrition. That is not true. They are all the same in terms of their morality. They don't have a moral value. So we're trying to neutralize sweet food by offering it alongside other foods that they already feel neutral about. So that's just a strategy that's helpful for kids that have a preoccupation with sweet food like chocolate. But we're not trying to tell the child that chocolate is the same as broccoli. So it's okay for kids to know that food is different and that food offer our bodies different support. Because I would never tell my kids that you can only have two pieces of broccoli with their dinner. But I also wouldn't allow them to have unlimited broccoli, just like I wouldn't allow them to have unlimited chocolate. So I have boundaries in place for all foods, not just chocolate, but I'll frame it in a way that focuses on getting a variety of foods for their body. If they fill up on the chocolate, then there's going to be less room to give their bodies all the other foods to help it move and grow and play and think, etc. So that's the first thing I'd say, is that we aren't saying that all food is the same nutritionally. We can educate our children about what nutrients it has that supports our body. And that answer is going to be different for chocolate and for broccoli. But that tip of adding sweet food alongside other food that they're already feeling neutral about, that's got a long-term purpose of helping the child feel more neutral around that food and to be able to implement their own supportive boundaries eventually. So we have control over food when they're children, and gradually the child's control with food will increase to the point of having full control by the time they're an adult and they've left. And by that stage, we would hope that we have done our job so that they can implement their own supportive boundaries and they are able to have some chocolate, not feel a loss of control, not feel like, oh, now mum and dad aren't around and I'll have 10 blocks of chocolate because there's no one here to tell me that I can't. You've guided them and supported them and shown them what healthy, supportive boundaries are with chocolate so that they can then do that job themselves. And a way that we do that is to help reduce a preoccupation or prevent a preoccupation and help neutralize a food by just showing that it can have a place on a dinner table alongside a range of other foods that they feel neutral about. I talk a lot about food neutrality everywhere. So there's one of my episodes about that as well, and plenty of posts. But if you have more questions, just reach out. And someone has written a comment about that, about putting chocolate on their plate with dinner. So I'll just read that out. They said, it's never worked for me. Every time I've done it, she eats the dessert first and they won't touch any of the other food on the plate because it's not as yummy as the dessert. I honestly just believe it's bad advice and our generation will come to regret it later. It's not putting sweets on a pedestal that makes our kids crave them. Kids inherently crave them because they're full of sugar and sugar gives our brains a hit of dopamine. We can't just treat it like any other food because it's not just any other food. A couple of things with that. When she says that it's never worked for me, I think she has an unrealistic expectation. I can't say for sure, but just based on saying that it's never worked, I think she's implying that my child hasn't also eaten the other food, so therefore this strategy is ineffective. When the strategy isn't putting the sweet food on there so that they will eat the other food. That's not the purpose of it. The purpose of putting the sweet food alongside the other food is to help neutralize it, not to make them eat everything else alongside it. So I think she's gone about it wrong, and that's why it hasn't worked for her, because she's thinking it should be doing something that's not intended to do. But if she was putting this strategy in place with the intention of just helping her child over a long period of time see that sweet food can go alongside other foods and it's not a food to be revered, doesn't need to be up on a pedestal, it's not something super exciting, it's on the dinner plate regularly, then I think she might have a different appreciation for how it can support her child. But putting sweet food on the plate alongside other food and then showing frustration that the child is only eating the sweet food is kind of counterproductive, because it's just taking away that neutrality. Like wanting them to eat certain foods and not other foods shows that they're not all the same. But I think putting the sweet food alongside dinner with the expectation that if I do this, then my child will eat everything, then you're going to be disappointed. I think it's counterproductive and it's not really what the purpose of doing that is. And what she says about kids inherently craving sweet food, food giving our brains a hit of dopamine. Yeah, totally understand how, of course, we are wired to like sweet food. It's in our nature to want to have, or for kids to want to eat sweet stuff. But that idea of putting sweet food up on a pedestal, I think that can unhelpfully contribute to a child's preoccupation with it. It is really normal for kids to want to eat sweet food, but we are doing them a disservice when we create that scarcity mindset. Not every child will have it, but the kids that do, they feel restricted, they feel deprived, They try and access it whenever they can. They try and eat as much as they can, as often as they can, because they feel like it's so restricted. So ultimately, we want them to have more of a neutral relationship where they can still enjoy it and like it and eat it regularly, but not feel out of control, not feel like they have to overdo it. So if you're someone who doesn't want to put sweet food alongside a meal, then don't. There are no rules here. You don't have to do that. But if you do still want to show your child that sweet food can have a place, then it's just about offering it regularly. It can be small portions. It can be any time you like. Doesn't have to even be with the meal. And if you'd like help with figuring out what that would look like for your children, please reach out because I'd love to help you. And I think I'll leave it there because there's only a couple more questions, but I've gone on for long enough. So if you have more questions based on what I've said, if I haven't explained myself very well, it's pretty late and I'm tired. Yeah, just please reach out. Like, I really love chatting about all this stuff and there's a lot of nuance to it. Like, that's why I feel like I have to explain it in a podcast episode and I can't just always do it justice in a post or a reel where there's limitations in how much I am able to write. So yeah, love chatting through this stuff. If you have more questions or if you'd like to book in a free discovery session, you can do that through my website or any of the contact details I put in the show notes. So happy Easter. I hope you've had a great long weekend. And as always, thanks for being here. I'll catch you in the next episode. See ya.